Recovering Queen. The Queen Fan Podcast, where we talk about and play the songs we love. With Jay, Matt, and Ian.
Welcome to the Recovering Queen Podcast, the podcast where we cover and talk about the methods and the madness of the greatest band in the world, Queen. I'm Matt, and here I am with my two co-hosts, Jay and Ian.
Hello.
Good evening.
So, Ian, what track are we going to be doing this evening?
We are doing Don't Lose Your Head. Don't lose your head. Don't lose your head.
Don't lose your head.
Don't lose your head.
Don't lose your head.
Don't lose your head. They say don't lose your head a lot throughout this track.
So what are your feelings, Jay, about Don't Lose Your Head?
I like it.
You like it?
Yeah, but yeah, so I do like it. I love the rhythm, the drive that goes all the way through it. Okay, I'm not sure about the instrumentation. It feels a little bit dated, a little bit 80s now. But I like the energy in it. It gets me excited on the whole. But obviously that the breakout advice section, cue laughter. Yeah, that's kind of bad, but yeah, the general gist of it, yeah, I like a lot.
Ian, what's your thoughts?
Well, for me, it's a perennial contender for, you know, definitely top five of the worst tracks that Queen ever did. I mean, the reason I chose it from A Kind of Magic was because I've always disliked it. There's just not anything really that I've enjoyed ever hearing about it since its release.
Yeah, but I'm going to defend it and say it's the big mistake, I think, with the whole endeavor is the fact that A Kind of Magic should never have been a fully fledged studio album by Queen. That the tracks off Highlander should have been part of a soundtrack album in the same way that Flash was. As in, we're not sitting here talking about, you know, some of the songs off Flash as being fully fledged songs.
Well, not yet.
Whereas not yet. But I mean, we wouldn't talk about, you know, just, you know, I mean, there are a few fully fledged songs on Flash, but there's a lot of things that are just clearly part of the soundtrack, as this is, yeah. You know, and I think it works well as the soundtrack, you know, that bit, yeah. where, you know, they're running around the apartment and then going out, and Kurgan kidnaps Brenda, the female lead, and takes her on a terrifying trip around the city, and Freddie sings the theme from New York, New York halfway through, and there's some crazy stuff in it, and it works really, really well in the film, even though the film really is a bit of an abomination.
It's great when you're 15, that film. It's a little bit challenging to watch 30-odd years later.
Well, I think 15-year-olds now would laugh at it. It's there's so many. It was a pop video, wasn't it, really? I mean, the whole film felt like a pop video even at the time, but now it just doesn't hold up.
I think that was the directors, wasn't it?
He was a pop video director, yeah. Roger Taylor, the whole Roger Taylor driving hypnotic mantra to the song is ruined by the breakout advice section, because it might have been better if he just stayed in that groove, but it just sort of pops out and does that bit. What on earth are the lyrics in that? So how many songs just have the word breathalyzer in them?
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that when I was doing the cover, I changed it so much from the original version that I only felt it right that I at least keep the lyrics right. But it was a struggle, you know, singing breathalyzed. I mean, it's just, no, that's, you know, there's certain words that should never appear in songs, and that's definitely one of them.
Well, there is a little fact about the breathalyzing section of this song. It's actually a dig at John Deacon. It's a dig at John Deacon. This whole section,
really?
is a dig at Mr. John Deacon.
How?
Well,
how could they ever have a dig at John?
I know, this is harsh. This is harsh. Almost cruel. It's like they're picking on him. But John Deacon, after Live in Rio, apparently was feeling a little bit more flush than normal. And he thought that maybe his continual purchases of Volvos needed to be upgraded to Porsches. So he bought himself a Porsche, went to go see Phil Collins. This is a pretty 80s story. He went to see Phil Collins live, has a little chat with Phil Collins afterwards, gets a little bit tipsy with Phil, and on his way back gets pulled over by the old Bill, gets breathalyzed and loses his license for an entire year.
No.
Yeah.
No way.
So this is Roger Taylor's dig at John for losing his license for a year.
Oh my God. So
that is outrageous.
And you think that that's bad, but like 2 days after the event, Brian May went on a radio station and got them to play Stevie Wonder's Don't Drive Drunk song.
Oh, so there is actually another song. There is a precedent then for the breathalyzer.
I don't think breathalyzer
genre.
Yeah, the don't drive drunk genre. Yeah. Yeah, Stevie Wonder, I think, is one of the major exponents of that genre.
So they
yeah.
put that bit on an actual Queen song and an actual Queen album,
just for
a bit of trolling.
Yeah, they're trolling John.
Top work.
Does it make it better or worse?
Perhaps more understandable, but still.
I like stories like that. It's lovely though, isn't it? It gives you a little bit more, you feel a bit closer to the band when you hear little stories like
that. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, absolutely.
It does seem like they've gone to great lengths to shame poor John. You would have thought that John losing his license for a year was bad enough. Apparently he went to the studio via the tube and no one ever stopped him. No one saw him. It apparently manages to travel around London on public transport without actually being hassled by anyone.
It's only a couple of stops, wasn't it, to Chiswick from
Putney? I was going to say, you can almost walk it. In fact, it's almost quicker to walk it across the bridge there.
Imagine Freddie on the tube.
Yeah, I don't reckon he could go on the tube.
No, I don't think so.
I'm not getting on there.
But it is, it's in that, we talk about the advice middle section. Well, it's a whole advice song, isn't it, as well? We've talked about the various things that Roger sings about quite often. And this is one of his advice songs. So there's been several through his career. Funnit giving us a bit of dance advice. You've got to fight from the inside. He's giving us a bit of advice there. And then on this one, not to lose our head. So it does fit in the Roger canon of work. Sits alongside that kind of driving rhythm as well of Ride the Wild Wind. And again, the kind of the driving theme as well.
Yeah, well, it's another classic Roger Taylor song where it's rhythmically very boring. it's a drum machine that just blasts all the way through. And that's it. It's
absolutely.
Like the drummer writing the most rhythmically boring pieces in the band. It's
very much puts me in mind of ZZ Top from the same era, where they switched from real drums to what sounded like drum machines and very electronic production. I think it was the year before Afterburner came out, which has got a very, very similar sound. And Brian's guitar solo, or even if it's kind of a solo, it's more kind of noodling really for Brian. At the end of
In which case it actually sounds more like Judas Priest as they moved into their turbo era. That had that kind of ZZ Top, influenced by ZZ Top's kind of moving into
I confess I'm more familiar with ZZ Top than I am with Priest's turbo.
Yeah, I believe Freddie and Rob were friends at that point as well.
I'm sure, yeah.
There's something more unusual about this song though, isn't there, in terms of other people on it.
It's one of those very few songs from the Queen catalogue that features people other than the members of Queen. So we have a guest appearance by one of the finest British singer-songwriters of all time, Joan Armatrading. But she's not really given a lot to do, is she? It's a bit curious, really. You get someone of that calibre in and she gets to say one line repeatedly.
Yeah, but it is that whole, they definitely didn't sort of book her into the studio. It wasn't like the management got on the phone and said, Roger's had this amazing idea and there's only one singer that can do it. It's Joan. It was definitely because they happened to be in the studio at the same time. Roger's obviously walking down the corridor, spots Joan. They must know each other because he's kind of begged her to say, look, can you just nip over here and say this line? So obviously Roger's realized that this line, don't lose your head, is in this song an awful lot. And he wants someone else to say it as well.
Maybe everyone got bored. Everyone got bored.
Yeah, everyone's gone home and saying, God, all right, I'm going home. And John Deacon's gone home because he's had to leave early because he's had to get the bus.
He got on the tube.
So
to avoid
rush hour. So John can't do it. So Joan Armatrading happens to be in the studio. So he's got her over to to say the lines. And actually, it is a good, she does do a good job on it.
No, she does. I mean, with the limited scope of what she's given to do, I think it's great. It's amazing how much you can do with the...
And it works. It works, doesn't it? I mean, it definitely adds to the track.
It does. It definitely adds something different.
And it's unusual for Queen. But here's my second fact about the song. So she's put down this part. What do you think Roger Taylor pays her for? How does Roger Taylor then go out and pay her as a kind of thank you?
Right. Well, hopefully she got some points for royalties for going on, because it must have shifted a few quid. You know, shifted a few units. So.
Yeah, she probably did. Yeah, she will undoubtedly get some kind of performance money on there. But no, Roger, to thank her, buys a dozen red roses.
Nice.
And I think, and obviously the pennies drop there, because that song is released as a B-side for a couple of the singles, as an instrumental called
"A Dozen Red Roses for My Darling," the B-side of A Kind of Magic.
There you go. So so that's why, and I'd never know, I didn't know that. And apparently that's the connection.
That's a great fact.
Yeah.
Yeah, I often wondered that, because it was, a curious wanting to, you know, it's always nice when Queen do release something other than album tracks on singles. But yeah, Dozen Red Roses for My Darling never really did much for me.
No, I mean, it's awful. If anyone's out there thinking that maybe Roger Taylor and Joan Armatrading were an item, and he was calling her. No, they weren't. She was going out with Valerie Singleton at the time, I believe.
And was Joan big at this time?
She was massive.
Hear that much about her.
Yeah,
this would have been her heyday. As
yeah,
well.
This was when she was. Yeah, oh, this yeah. was that. This was her heyday. What's her really big?
I mean, there's been a few, but Love and Affection. Yeah, that was it's Love and Affection, the one isn't that it? Most people yeah. know. But in its defense, the performance by Freddie, as ever, is astonishingly good. Very, very high. Kind of took me by surprise. Wish I'd transposed it a little bit, because it is right on the edge of my range. Obviously sounds quite low, as ever, when Freddie does it. But he absolutely belts it out and sounds great.
It does sound great. I did dig up a little fact that I thought was pretty astonishing in some ways. And that was... the album itself, in 2006, a national BBC poll. This, we're talking the best albums of all time. Where do you think?
What Kind of Magic?
Kind of Magic.
What year was the poll made?
2006.
You sure you're not thinking of Night at the Opera here?
10 years after.
If you're thinking... because
it's one of them.
It's one of them, right. Okay, so... No,
it's Kind of Magic.
It wouldn't even be top 100.
No, it wouldn't. You wouldn't think...
No, you wouldn't think, no.
I mean, there's all of Queen's other albums to start with.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kind of Magic.
I mean, it's not like in the top 10 or anything, you know, I mean, that would be silly, wouldn't it? But yeah. Even so.
36, number 36.
Yeah, not bad. 42, best albums of all time.
Yeah, I'd be hard pressed to justify that myself.
Mm. Also, it was their first digital recording.
That is good. That's a good flag.
Oh,
there's
yeah,
also
yeah,
seven singles off that album.
God.
Wow. Yeah.
One Vision, Kind of Magic, Princes of the Universe, One Year of Love, Friends Will Be Friends, Pain Is So Close to Pleasure in Germany and Netherlands, and Who Wants to Live Forever? So it's wow. It's chock-a-block full of singles.
Yeah, and it's another one of those ones where I think that... One Vision shouldn't have been included on the album. I remember being slightly disappointed when One Vision was, because that was again the year before, and you know, you put it on the album and it just didn't seem to quite fit.
Well, I mean, that's the album though, isn't it? A lot of it is, as Matt said earlier on, it's a soundtrack album, then bolted on another three songs that,
yeah,
it's just really awkward and sits really awkwardly for me anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean the like things like One Year of Love, I think it only works in the context of a film at best. Yeah.
But even so, those lyrics for that don't really work in the context of that film.
Yeah. Oh,
man. You know, it's a curious But deconstructing the song and, you know, building it back up again, it really did pleasantly surprise me what was buried in there. Ignoring the lyrics, because there's nothing I can say about the lyrics to defend those. But the core melody of the, you know, the verse bit of Don't Lose Your Head or Don't Lose Your Heart, really nice. And the Remember, Love Stronger, that progression, that's kind of four interesting chords. There is quality in there, as ever. Rogers, time and time again, you know, totally quality songwriter. It's really the production, the arrangement and the lyrics, but really the production and the arrangement that I really don't like off Kind of Magic. The song itself, once again, proves to be a lot better than I thought it was.
Mm. It's a nice version, how you've done it in. It reminded me of sort of slightly proggy.
Reminded me of Elbow.
Yeah, I was going for that kind of slightly indie kind of thing. Yeah, maybe, you know, a quiet grunge section, you know, if I'd ramped up the chorus a bit more or the middle eight a bit more, perhaps.
That stands out really nicely as well. That was the first thing I noticed on it. And, the Love Conquers All bit, it is quite a lovely sequence of chords, isn't it, building up
it
to
is.
That?
And slightly unusual as well. You know, there's a key change, I think, after the third or the second chord. And then it does bring itself back nicely to the main hook of the song again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as ever, you know, Roger's got that just inherent talent that even if they're not packaging it particularly well, the fundamentals of melody and chords are always there. But it's a soundtrack for a film. It's not a song.
Considering we've been talking about songs like 39 and Play the Game, it's not in, it's, you know, we can't possibly compare it to that level of songwriting skill.
It's not finished. It's almost, you know, the due care and attention, you know, to me, it just hasn't been put there. Particularly that I remember being so excited about that album coming out, and I rushed to the shop day of release, rushed home, listened to it back to back for weeks and weeks and weeks, totally obsessed with Queen. Even back then, I remember being slightly disappointed by the quality of it, because we knew what had come before, you know, being brought up on Queen's greatest hits, and then you're presented with that, bit disappointing.
I just think it's unfair to be judging it as an album track when really it's a snippet from a film. And Roger's done a good job. For that job, it's great. For the job of a song on an album, it's not really up to Queen standard, is it? The version that you do, I have to say, does bring out the good aspects of the song and does reveal that there is actually a fairly decent song there. But like you said, the melodies and everything else. So I think, you know, it's a pity that it's kind of remained in the format that it has.
And I do remember it being a very exciting time to be a Queen fan as well. You know, not only the album coming out and, you know, the Magic Tour being, you know, by far their biggest, most successful tour, but all the releases as well, all the singles. Every single was released as a 12-inch with extended versions and little extras here and there. The CD coming out, and that had bonus tracks on it. It was a great time to be a Queen fan.
Well, do you know what? All I remember is thinking, somebody asked me if I wanted to go and see them. This is about 86, is this? 86?
Yeah.
And I asked my parents and they were going, oh, you're too young to be going down to London. No, you just wait a little bit. Get, you know, a couple of years later and you can go and see them then.
Yep, same.
And
same.
That's the worst thing ever.
The only advantage of being one year older than you guys.
Yeah.
I managed to get to Manchester to see them that time.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with us at RecoveringQ on Twitter or www.recoveringqueen.co.uk. So without any further delay, here is Ian's version of Don't Lose Your Head.